Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Hello, Dr. Looper.
Hello, Haley.
So, last episode, very interesting, talking about the gut-brain access, that gut-brain connection, and how the food that we're eating is ultimately affecting our mental health. And I want to go from that, talk more so about treatment. And from every episode we've ever done in the history, the treatment comes down to eat right, exercise, and sleep. So why don't we talk about some of our favorite superfoods or health foods so that we can recommend what to eat.
That sounds great. That's a great topic. Though I would add one more element to the eat right, exercise, and sleep. I'd say have meaning and purpose in your life. And that comes from social relations by and large. And so those are really the four cornerstones. The social relations one, you think would just go by itself without saying, because we're social creatures and we live in families or have relatives and friends and all that stuff. We work with other people. The fact of the matter, though, is lots of people are isolated. Lots of people do not have friends, do not make friends, and they really are living lives of quiet despair. And they could be eating well and exercising and sleeping well, and they still fall apart. In fact, if you really get down to the research on it, the thing that predicts longevity more than anything is social systems. So social systems have a profound effect on our health. So I'd add that to the list. Now, having said that, let's not talk about social systems. And let's talk about favorite foods. And there are lots and lots of favorite foods I have. This is an interesting topic because it's not all about superfoods. Like, if I had one food to live on, what would I eat? It's more of, you know, what do I like? Because if I like it, chances are I'm going to eat it.
Right. Right. Or how do you make it to where you like it?
Yeah, and I want to make sure that it's healthy and likable at the same time. So that is the trick.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of things that are tasting delicious that turn out to be really bad for you. The list is very long.
Longer, I would say, than the list of things that are tasty and delicious and really good for you.
Ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream goes in the bad list,
oh,
for sure.
But
I'm so sorry.
I want it to be in the good.
Okay, so let me pick my favorite food, the one that I eat every day, the one that I really depend on to keep me healthy, and that's purple.
Purple.
I eat purple.
Purple, just purple. That's funny because anytime we get a purple vegetable, me and Addie call it purple power. And that's how I get her to eat cabbage, purple potatoes, purple, even carrots when we can find them.
It's better, isn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then we have purple power.
Yeah, you know what? The plant puts purple in the food to make it more attractive for us, at least for berries.
Yeah.
There's white berries and there's purple berries.
And blueberries.
And if you go look at animals, they'll go for the purple ones more than they'll go for the white ones. And we're animals too. We like the purple ones better than we like the white ones. You think about the grocery store, how many white one berries are there available? They grow, there's white berries. I can't think of any. Purple berries, there's all kinds.
Yeah.
Purple.
So purple, there's blackberries, there's blueberries, there's grapes, there's huckleberries.
Cherries.
There.
So a white one, white grapes.
Okay.
Those are white. And they're good, they're delicious, but the purple ones are more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
People generally go for the purple bits.
Are the white grapes, like, engineered?
Yes.
Okay, so they're not naturally occurring.
Well, no, they are naturally occurring, but they're selected. Grapes right now are not what grapes were.
Right.
You cannot get a wild grape.
No, you...
They're not
on
the market.
There were never cotton candy grapes in the wild. That was never a cotton candy grape bush.
So whatever food we're going to talk about, this is like a historical talk because we're going to talk about foods that are available now. But in 20 years and 30 years and 100 years and 200 years, the food's going to be different because the farmers are actively selecting for sweet foods because they sell better, they look better, They're just better all the way around for them because they make more money on them.
And foods that'll be sustainable on Mars.
You cannot get old-fashioned, woody, dry, sour, funky foods that we would never eat. Because why would you ever eat that food? Except for it turns out that was the healthier version. I'm sorry to tell you this, but nearly all the foods that are really good for you, they don't really necessarily taste that good.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of nutrients in them that give it this kind of, woody, earthy, organic taste.
Yeah, like most of the nutrients on a potato is in the skin. And who's out there eating the potato skins?
Yes.
I mean, I am because I know that.
Right.
But like...
the earthy part.
The earthy part. Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about blueberries. Blueberries are my favorite superfood. And my favorite blueberry is the Alaskan wild blueberry. They're fabulous. They're amazingly good. Now, for a lot of you out there never had an Alaskan wild blueberry because they're not sold on the market as far as I know. You have to go out in the bushes and go get them.
Yeah, and when you are out in the bushes, if you are in Alaska and you are listening to this, please do not overpick our bushes. We want them to grow back. We want to preserve our berries. So please...
There's always some fall. Do we have to worry about that?
We could take what falls, but like if you overpick an area, then it doesn't regrow.
This is a whole nother show.
I just wanted to put a little plug in there to be mindful.
I didn't realize that was a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Okay, let's not go there. So we're going to get what berries we can. We're just going to leave three of them to grow a new bush. Okay, so here's the thing about the berries. They're small and they're sour. Now, they're super flavorful. They're super
purple.
They're
not sweet.
They're not sweet.
And sometimes they're small. They're not as big as these blueberries that are at Costco that are the size of a quarter. But I've seen, like, nickel-sized blueberries at the beginning of this season.
Rare.
Yeah.
Most of them are little things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quarter inch is a pretty big blueberry. That's a big one. They do occur.
They do.
And, you know, the funny thing is we always want the big ones. The reason why, because the big ones have... purple on the outside and has white on the inside. The white is the sweet part.
Mm-hmm.
The purple is the sour part.
Mm-hmm.
So the smaller the berry, the more percentage purple and the less percentage white.
And the more percentage purple, the better it is for you.
For you.
Yeah.
And the bigger the berry, the more percentage white and the sweeter it is for you. I mean, the sweeter it is to you and the worse it is for you.
Because it has more sugar.
More sugar.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. So I went to Costco on Saturday and I saw blueberries, a whole container of them, a whole pint of them, that were as big as grapes.
Yeah.
I could not believe
Insane,
how big they were.
Right?
It wasn't one or two that were that big. It was the whole thing that was that big. The farmers have yet again taken blueberry technology to the next level. And they've lowered the amount of purple and they've increased the amount of nutrients. And so they're sweeter and better.
No.
But the thing is, the regular person, we're programmed to look for the big sweet ones because that's in nature what we do, right?
Yeah, and it tastes good. We put a big blueberry in our mouth and it's yummy.
Yep. So anyways, purple in general turns out to be good. So purple cabbage has a teeny bit of purple in it. Does it count? Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. I was thinking more so along the vegetable lines, not so much the berry lines. But there's a lot more purple berries and the purple berries have a lot more... cancer-fighting properties in them.
Yes, very much so. So, berries are my favorite superfood. Blueberries in particular, but blackberries are excellent. Cherries are also purple, at least some of them are. Those are excellent as well.
That shade, right, like the red, would that still contain the anthocyanins?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the purple berries I'm thinking of are Bing berries, and those are dark purple.
Okay.
Those are the best ones. If they're purple, they're better for you. Okay, we're doing a show on food, our favorite foods, because I'm tempted to go into this whole lecture about why purple is better for you. Let me just say it is. It acts as an antioxidant. It helps create the healthy bacteria in your gut and regulate the gut environment for them. It's an anti-cancer. Your body tends to run better. Your liver tends to run better. Your hormone regulation is better. You're better Better in a zillion ways.
Yeah.
Less Alzheimer's. I mean, we can go on the list, long list of diseases that you're going to either not get or get a lighter version of based on eating purple. So purple turns out to be a super, super good thing to eat. And that's why
What about drinking it?
Drinking's fine, too. Yeah, you could drink it.
So we could drink purple? So, like, people who partake in wine?
Yes. Yes, the answer is yes. wine turns out to have purple. Purple's a great thing.
Okay, for those of us who don't drink wine, what about, like, cherry juice or pomegranate juice or...
Yes and no. The juices are too sweet because you take the pulp out and you take the juice of it and you concentrate it, so it's more sweet than our body really should be getting. So the easy solution to that one is dilute it.
Yeah.
So do a quarter juice, three quarters water, mm-hmm. and then you can drink it with impunity because it's diluted. Mm-hmm. And the sugar's not as concentrated. Doesn't push your blood sugars up. It still will push your blood sugars up, but it doesn't go up as much. So purple tends to be better as a juice than apple juice. Apple juice is yellow or golden, and it turns out to be super sweet. And so you push your blood sugars up a lot. I mean, apple juice is basically Pepsi with a little more nutrients in it. Orange juice, the same story.
I don't know if it has that much nutrients.
I mean, it'll push. It's got more nutrients, I kid you not, because it comes from an apple. But it's got, it'll push your blood sugars up the same as just doing soda.
Yeah, I see kids' apple juice nutrition labels with the same sugar content as a Coke. So
the sugar content's the same. There is some trace nutrients, since it used to be a living thing, whereas Pepsi was never living. Right? Or Coke or whatever.
Perfectly artificial,
right?
So, berries.
Okay, what else? What's your favorite food?
I like kale. I really like kale. Why? I know that's not
What's the deal with kale?
It's just tasty to me, and it's crunchy to me, and it's loaded with a bunch of nutrients.
Yeah, super high in the nutrients. Kale's particularly good for your liver. Mm-hmm. Kale's got this stuff, it's indole methane, which we won't say again. We're going to call it DIM or DIM. DIM turns out to be really, really good for your liver. And when it's good for your liver, it's good for hormone regulation. It's often used as a supplement to help women with menopausal symptoms or women with premenstrual problems or even women who get morning sickness. It turns out to be helpful with that as well. So it's good. It's good for your liver.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why kale is so good. Now, kale also has got green in it.
Mm-hmm.
Green is chlorophyll. Chlorophyll turns out to be, you know, a natural cleaner for your body. It's an antioxidant. It does all kinds of good things. It's also high in fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Fiber helps feed your beneficial bacteria, help trap toxins so they leave your body rather than get reabsorbed. Kale turns out to be this health food. Now, there's a downside to kale. Kale steamed is horrid.
Oh my god, I love it.
Do you?
I like
You're odd one. I know.
Like
steamed kale is waste of time.
Steam a little kale, and then if I'm being naughty, I'll put goat cheese, melted goat cheese in it.
Well, anything's better
and
with melted goat cheese.
Like, yeah, just top it with some bacon bits. I mean, that's going off the rocker.
So the best way to do kale, I find, is to pick it fresh out of the garden.
Yep.
Not the big leathery leaves, but the little small
curlies.
New ones, the ones that come up. The first, you take those out. They're soft. They're delicious. There's no bitterness in them whatsoever, and you eat them as a salad, and it's fabulous. So I'm a huge fan of those, except you can't buy them in the grocery store because they don't sell them.
Mm-hmm.
They sell yo kale plant.
They have like prepackaged bags of kale, too, that have little like smaller flory, if... You
that
will.
Might be a better way, because they do like the micro peels or whatever.
Yeah.
That may be another way to get it. The other thing is, if you take the kale and you put it in a pot or a bag or something, and you take a little bit of oil and a lot of spices, salt, pepper, garlic, mustard powder, whatever. And you do this little shaky shake thing, and you stick them in a hot cookie sheet. And then you cook them till they're crisp.
Yep.
That is a tasty sensation.
Yeah.
Now you're cooking a lot of the nutrients out.
Mm-hmm.
You're
adding oil.
The delicate, right. You're turning it into a junk food is what you're doing.
Yeah.
But it is not a junk food.
But we can pretend.
If the choice is eating kale or eating nothing, you know, kale chips
or
nothing.
If the choice is eating kale
these are 10
chips
times better than
or
nothing.
Potato chips, it's going to be significantly better eating kale chips.
So, anyways, kale chips is a great way to do it. I'm going to show you. It's funny you picked kale because mine is in the same family. Mine is Brussels sprouts.
Love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, but here, let me do a confession to begin with. Brussels sprouts are my least favorite vegetable. I would say I hate Brussels sprouts because the only way that I'd ever had them was boiled. The way you got them was that you got them out of a bag that was frozen in my family.
Yeah.
And you dumped them into water and you boiled them for 10 minutes and they, or whatever, how long?
Then they're mush.
And they came out stinky.
Mush.
They got, naturally have a lot of sulfur in them.
Uh-huh.
And so it brings the sulfur out. And somehow that sulfur smells like rotten eggs or something to me. It's subtle. It's not rotten eggs, but it's got this smell and it would drive me out of the kitchen. I couldn't stand Brussels sprouts. So anybody was to ask me if I like Brussels sprouts, I'd say no, anything but Brussels sprouts.
So what do you do now?
The Brussels sprouts went from my least favorite vegetable to my most favorite vegetable. And how that happened was by roasting them.
Roasting or air frying. I use an air fryer, and that's the same.
Same thing. Air fryer is basically convection oven.
Yeah.
It's a brand of convection oven.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. So what you do, if you don't know how to do this, let me tell you how to do it. Same thing. You way to get is I use a Ziploc bag. First of all, I take all the Brussels sprouts. I trim them. That is, I cut the little funky bottoms off just a little bit, and then I cut them in half.
Mm-hmm.
And then I throw them into the bag, and I put in a couple tablespoons of oil. I put salt, pepper, garlic, whatever else, maybe some red pepper if I want to get a little spice in there, and then something pungent. Either I'll do dry mustard powder, which works beautifully. You
okay.
Wouldn't think.
I haven't tried that, so.
It works beautifully.
Okay.
It'll blow your mind how good it is. Or my favorite is fresh grated horseradish.
Ooh.
Which they sell at the grocery store.
I like
occasionally.
That idea.
And so you just get a grater or a zest or whatever, and you just grate it, a little fine grater, and throw in a tablespoon or two into the bag, shake it all up, and pour it out onto a hot cookie sheet. Make sure it's hot. You stick it in the oven at 425 till it's blistering hot. You pull it out with a, you know, a oven mitt. Don't touch it. And then pour the bag out and then shake it to where they're running flat or just kind of poke them around to make them run flat. Push it back into the oven. Cook it for 10 minutes. It doesn't take long because it's already hot. They steam instantly. And then they start getting crispy. The problem is that they're seared on the bottom, but they're not seared on the top. So you got to take a spatula, and this, you have to do this job, or it doesn't come out right. And you scoop the spatula and flip. Scoop, flip, scoop, flip, scoop, flip. You do the whole thing. It takes, I don't know, 10 seconds, 15 if you're slow at it.
And then they go back in.
And then you go back in for another 5 minutes, and then you look at them. And when they look overdone, they look like, oh, they're just about on the edge of burning. The leaves have curled up, and they're brown. And if they go another 30 seconds, they're going to be black.
Yeah.
That's when you take them out. They stay in longer than you think. You think, oh,
are you roasting out all the nutrients at that point?
No. Just some. It's not about the nutrients.
Yeah.
It's about how good they taste.
It's the flavor at this point.
Now, there's plenty of nutrients in these things. They're little balls of nutrients is what they are. The centers get steamy, but they don't get killed.
Mm-hmm.
The little outer leaf gets curly, and when it becomes, there's a word for this, caramelized.
Okay.
When they become caramelized, they are heavenly.
Yes.
This is what you do when company comes over,
and
you want to cook something really, you know, we got to do the good one, right? This is what you do.
The caramelized Brussels
sprouts. You can't get any better than that. So you blow everybody's mind by doing this.
So I know what I'm going home.
Yeah, don't take my word for it. Give it a try
for
yourself.
Dinner tonight.
Yeah, and they're wonderful. Now, the nice thing is the local grocery store has a bag of them, and we get a bag every week.
Yep.
This turns out to be a staple in our family. And occasionally, they'll have the stalks. You know, Brussels sprouts grow on this weird stalk,
yeah,
right?
They do.
And then you have to cut all the Brussels sprouts off. They're buds is what they are. And the thing about Brussels sprouts that make them particularly good is their buds. So the plant puts its best nutrients into the buds because that's a growing part of the plant. It's not the stem. It's all the intense nutrient concentration is going to be on the buds, on the ends. Now, that's another thing that's nice about broccoli. Broccoli are flowers before they've opened up.
Mm-hmm.
So you let broccoli go. I don't know if everybody knows that, but broccoli is the flower.
Yeah.
And then if you just let it grow in your garden, it opens up these little yellow flowers.
And they're so cute, but they're so
sad. You don't eat them.
Yeah, when you see the flowers, you know it's gone too long.
It's gone too far.
Or it got too hot.
It bolted is what it's called.
Exactly.
It bolted, that's the name for it. Once it bolts, it's like, yeah, it's not worth doing it. You want to get it before the bolt because that's where all the nutrients are concentrated in. And we know by instinct, we eat that. Ooh, that's the good part. Now, you can eat a stem. Stems are all right. It's just that the flowery part is better. It's more tender. It's better. It tastes better. It has more density of nutrients in it. And Brussels sprouts the same way. They're dense with nutrients. So that's another favorite superfood.
Broccoli.
Yeah, okay, let me do the next one, even though I'm going out of turn. I'm going to do a weird one, one that you would never think in a million years that I would pick, and that's bread. Now, we've bad talked bread every time on the show.
We've bad talked carbohydrates all day. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, how can I pick bread as a favorite food? Now, let me explain. I went to Spain in June, and I ate bread every day while I was there. It was a health food. They eat, in Catalonia, they eat this bread that's like day-old bread. It's stale. They smear garlic on it. They take a garlic clove and just really scrub it on
okay,
it.
Okay, so that's what makes it healthy, is
and
the garlic.
And then crush some tomatoes and throw it on top. You think it would make this tomato good because it's fresh tomatoes. And somehow or other, the combination is absolutely fabulous. And I wondered, why didn't I get fat eating bread? Why didn't I get sick eating bread? I can't eat bread. Bread's bad food. I can't live on bread. And when I came home, I quit eating bread because I can't eat American bread. It was something about
Did Christy eat bread?
No.
Okay.
If something about the Spanish bread. And the thing is that they have a different strain of wheat. And the real problem, as far as I could tell, is that the wheat strains in America are more advanced. They have a higher production. They get more bushels per acre. And what the farmers have done is they've created this Frankenstein wheat that grows incredibly plump, incredibly, you know, abundant, and incredibly difficult to digest. So it's the same story that we told before, which is ease of digestion.
Okay.
If you can digest the bread all the way, it turns out it's full of all kinds of good things. Mm-hmm. Also, you need the bran to go in it. So this bread won't last.
Right.
You can't eat it after it's 2 days old. One day it's good, second day it's good, third day it's bad.
Yeah.
Because it molds and becomes unedible.
Huh.
So there it is. It's so nutrient dense, it spoils. Now, when is the last time you bought a loaf of bread? Man, my boy eats bread.
Yeah, they last about a week and a half for me.
Yeah, which is freakishly long
yeah.
for how long it should last.
Because maybe 2 weeks even.
If it's really good nutrients, the bugs are going to eat
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's going to decompose.
It's going to mold, that's what it's going to do. It's yeah. too dry for bacteria to eat it, but the mold loves it.
So what kind of bread was this? Was this like, the only type of bread I can think with living organisms is sourdough.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
What about rye?
Yes. That's also a good one.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to get old-fashioned grains. The bread tends to be heavier. It tends to be more expensive. And if you could sourdough it, it makes it even better. So that's what I'm. That's my favorite superfood.
Good. Because we love a sourdough bread. Now,
European sourdough.
I have not been able to perfect my sourdough yet. I had to put my sourdough starter to sleep. This summer, last winter, I had a sourdough project. I tried to bake 3 loaves of bread. None of them worked out.
What did they do?
They got hard.
So they didn't rise?
Yeah, it didn't rise enough. And
you usually have to let it sit longer. How long yeah. did you proof it for?
Oh, man, like a day.
No, that's usually enough. You can see because it goes up.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole project. We can do a whole nother episode on how to do a sourdough. We can invite people to talk about sourdough. I would love that because I need to.
Well, I just opened the door because I picked this as a superfood.
Yep.
And it turns out what the sourdough does is it starts a process of digestion. Remember the last show we did and I went on and on about how the trouble with people these days, right, is they don't digest their food all yeah. the way, is that there's undigested food in their digestive system, and what it does is it rots, and it rots their brains, and now they're all going cattywampus whacked. They're getting depression, they're getting anxiety, they're getting Parkinson's, they're getting ADHD, they're
OCD,
getting autism, right?
Okay.
And that's the common element why the numbers of all these diseases are going up is because how we live. We have this food that won't digest. So this is the opposite. This is old-fashioned food. This is food you can't make money on as much as before because the yields per acre are less, and you get a higher quality food but at a more expensive price. And so the average person doesn't want to buy that. They'll buy the cheap bread rather than buy the expensive bread. So what I've had to do is go out of my way to get expensive bread. What we ended up doing was getting food from, you know, in Europe, it's you just go to the baker because they've been doing this forever. If they ever changed the bread recipe, people would howl and would not go to the baker because I'm not going to buy this crap. This tastes like American bread, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I ain't eating that. Mm-hmm. They know the good stuff.
Old country
but over
bread.
Here, what good stuff? No. I mean, all I ever did was eat the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Now, we have a bakery that's close by my house. And so recently, this weekend, I bought a loaf of bread from them and decided to do an experiment. And we had company over and made actually garlic bread is what we did, just butter
delicious.
And garlic. And it came out fabulous.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't eat the whole loaf because it was too much bread, but we cut it in little slices and ate one or two or three, depending who was eating the bread. And everybody did great. Nobody overate. It turned out to be a great food. It was fabulous. It was a great addition to the dinner that we had. And it was digestible.
So the bread that we used to buy in the family were like the baguettes at the store. And they were $1.49. And they were bigger. They weren't these little skinny baguettes. And now yeah. I bought a baguette the other day. And it was so narrow. And it was $3.49.
Yeah, well, there he is. Prices are going up. And so there's a lot of push.
Sizes are going down. Nutrients is going down.
Yeah. Like that. That's going on. So our show is favorite foods. Okay, we got some time. You got another one?
We got maybe another one. I think
okay, so you want me to pick another one?
Yeah, pick another one. I like kale. I like broccoli. I like berries. I think we went through...
No. I got one. Without a doubt.
Is that a superfood? 100%.
This one is fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Oh, I know.
What?
Well, maybe some mushrooms?
No, mushrooms are good, too. I like mushrooms. They're not my favorite... Because mushrooms are great. I eat mushrooms every day.
Yeah, mushrooms are a staple for me, for sure. Different things.
No, it's beets.
Beets.
Now, beets are weird because when I was a kid, the only beet that I ever got exposed to was pickled beets that come out of a jar.
I love pickled beets.
Or they come out of a can.
And
I hated them.
Good? Are those
healthy?
They're
sour. They're horrible. Are they healthy? Yes, they are.
Do they have nutrients in them?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do, in fact.
They're pickled and the sugar content is high?
No, the sour content's high. They're actually pickled in a brine is what they are. Beets are turned into pickles. Pickled beets are pickles made out of
beets.
Like
the little slivers that you see at a salad bar.
Uh-huh.
Those are pickled?
Those are pickled.
Those are so sweet to me.
They might not be pickled beets then, because pickled beets taste like pickles. That was all I ever had. See, we live in different worlds. I was born in the 60s, so I grew up with 60s food, and pickled beets was the only beet that ever came across my world. Now, it turns out I was maybe in my, late 30s, the first time I had actually eaten a beet that, you know, somebody cooked a beet. Like she comes out of the ground.
Yeah.
You peel it.
I don't think I've ever cooked
a beet. You chop the top?
Oh, yeah. No, I've had roasted beets.
So I cook beets all
the
time.
But now we're back to purple power.
Exactly. Bingo. We're back to our first superfood. We're going to end on the same story, which is beets are just chock-a-block, solid, full of purple. Now, not all beets are purple. You can get, what are they called? There's another name for these beets. Golden. That's what they're called. Golden beets. And the golden beets are sweeter, and they make fabulous food. They stir fry beautifully. They make soup beautifully. They're really, really, really good. But I go out of my way to go for the purple ones because I like the purple. And so what I ended up doing is I was scrounging through the grocery store trying to find the best produce I can, trying stuff, buying it, trying all the different kinds of things. Parsnips and rutabagas and turnips and carrots, of course, and every vegetable they have in the grocery store, if it looks good. If it looks wilty, I won't buy it. But if it looks good, I'll buy it. Asparagus I used, peppers I used. They had some Anaheim peppers. And I did various kinds of things on all these foods, chopping them up, trying to make the best soup I can because I eat soup every day
for
lunch.
Your soups they smell phenomenal.
You know, I don't want to work too hard to be healthy. I want it to be easy. I want it to be where I just eat food that I like and that it's what I have. So if I'm having to work too hard to be good, it's too much. I don't have that much willpower. I can't keep it up all the time.
We gotta have enjoyment in some things.
So I make this concoction I get my mad scientist hat on, and I, you know, I and Newt and some Batwing and mix it all in, and comes out this fabulous thing, which I freeze in these little containers so it doesn't go bad, and then I bring a container in every few days because there's two units in a container. And I eat that for lunch, and I have this fabulous lunch every day that I look forward to. Yeah. Come lunchtime, I go, oh, boy.
That's packed with nutrients. It's packed with superfoods.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. All these things we're talking about. By the way, kale is in my soup.
Yeah, I'll bring some kale from my garden. I have to harvest the rest of it. It's time. It's also time for us to end this episode.
Cool. All right. Well, good. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about this. It's a little lighter. We didn't talk about any diseases today, or at least not much. I like that. It's
but nice all these like show. Things that we're talking about prevent diseases, because something that I heard when I was younger that stuck with me when I was really getting into nutrition and how to live well was that anything you put in your body is either feeding or fighting disease.
Yeah, right. So, right. Good. That's true. You are what you eat. No doubt about it. Yeah, and I like feeling good. I value when things are working enough to where I scheme.
Yeah.
And I think, and I kind of sort out stuff.
And you're able to have the clarity to do so.
What I can eat, what I can't eat, and try to sort it out, try to get the right combination of stuff so where that it turns out to be, you know, tasty and delicious and makes me feel good. So, yeah, that's what I recommend.
Cool. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy. This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.